The Early Childhood K-12 or E-12 Education Budget Committee will come to order. And today is local levy day. And so we have a number of levies that we'll be talking about, fund transfers and levies. And we're going to start out with Senator Vickerman. And I believe there's a little bit of crossover between Senator Frederickson's district and Senator Vickerman's district there. And this is Senate File 42. Is that correct?
327.
327. Okay. Senator Vickerman.
Well, Mr. Chair, thanks for allowing me to maybe move ahead of my good friend here. I'm supposed to be on a radio here pretty quick, so hopefully this won't take too long. I have an amendment, Mr. Chair, the A-1 amendment. Is that there to put the bill in order? I'd like to have it.
Okay. We will move that amendment when quick as we have a majority. The amendment, if you could just talk to the amendment or the superintendent. Is it...
Mr. Chair, what the amendment does, it cuts it down from 400 to 300.
Per year, okay. For 2 years.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chair, to save time on a busy committee, why don't I have Mr. Arndt explain it, because they're all kind of the same thing, and he can do it rather than me do it, tell him, and then do it over again. So if you would.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator Vickerman, and Superintendent Arndt.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I'm proposing that I move $300,000 from my capital outlay account into the general account, both for the present school year and for next school year. We came very close, within $30,000 of statutory last year. Tried unsuccessfully to pass a referendum this fall. We will be going out again next fall for a referendum. But to keep me out of statutory debt, I need this authorization, if I could, please.
Can you give us just an idea of the what do you have in the capital operating account?
At the end of 2005-06, I had $311,000. I'm predicted the balance or the budget is predicted to have $410,000 in 2006-07. Taking out the $300,000, I should have a fund balance of $110,000. With the predicted revenue, I would have about $523,000 in 2007-08. And then taking out the revenue there again, I expect to end up with about $333,000 in 2007-08. Keep in mind that we did pass a bond issue in 2001. To update my buildings, and they're in pretty good shape. I have told the board that this is a one-time only possibility because I can't continue to take out a capital. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to stay out of statutory debt.
Mr. Arndt, in the amendment, you're moving from $400,000 to $600,000. Is the fund that you're transferring from the capital operating account, and the figures that you gave me, I wasn't tracking all of the years, but do you have adequate money to move from the capital operating account to the general fund?
Yes, I do. It'd be very close. It's but it also gives me some flexibility. If something major were to happen, I could use general fund money then back into the capital account.
I take it that you also need the money this year, not...
Yeah, if I don't get the money this year... the predicted budget would be we'd be in statutory debt at the end of this year. So I'm trying very hard to stay out of statutory debt and then try again to pass a referendum.
Mr. Chairman, your pleasure.
Mr. Nauer?
Mr. Chairman and Superintendent, I'm curious, if we gave you $600,000 of transfer authority effective June 30th at the end of the year, would that be sufficient to meet your needs?
It would, but I wouldn't have that kind of money in my capital account
until
the following year. What I'm banking on is the at the end of this year, I'm predicted to have $410,000 without the $300,000. In other words, if I subtract the $300,000, I would have $110,000 fund balance in the capital account at the end of this year. And then additional revenues. So I need to have the authority for both years, is what I'm saying.
I understand the issue.
All right. Good morning. Let the record reflect that there is a quorum. Senator Wieger moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 327. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted. Okay. Senator Wieger, do you want to move that Senate File 327 as amended be laid on the table?
So moved.
All right. Senator, is there any other questions? So what the bill that you have, Senator Vickerman, is two transfers of $300,000 right now. Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps members would indulge me. I think the way to think about this, the superintendent would prefer a fund transfer of $300,000 at the end of the current fiscal year, because that's the point at which he would have sufficient revenue to make that transfer. And then a year later would like an additional transfer of $300,000. So it might be clearer to actually add some dates in this if you were to adopt this. Sometimes that's usually what we do. The district may make the transfer on June 30th, 2007, and then another on June 30th, 2008. But we can deal with that another time.
Okay, I think the direction that the committee would give staff is to come up with a clarifying language for that. So, on Senator Wieger's motion to lay Senate File 327 as amended on the table, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. All right, thank you, Senator Vickerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you.
Senator Fredrickson, Senate File 42 and Senate File 151.
Mr. Chairman, thank you and good morning. I have sitting at the table with me Mr. Wayne Olson from the Comfrey School District. Sort of a little parallelism here because Senator Vickerman and I share both of these representing both of these districts that I have bills for this morning. They're both partly in my Senate district and partly in Senator Vickerman's district. And I think you'll find that both have some unique characteristics. First one we're taking up is Senate File 42, fund transfer for the school district of Comfrey. And it's to transfer $250,000 from the capital operating account to the general fund. And with just that as an introduction, I'd like Mr. Olson to explain a little bit about the school district and why they would be able to do this.
Okay, thank you, Senator Fredrickson. Superintendent Olson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Comfrey is a small district, rural Minnesota. We have a relatively new building. It was rebuilt after a tornado 7 years ago. And we have approximately $327,000 in our capital reserve capital fund. And we'd like to transfer up to $250,000 into our operating fund to, like Gerard said, keep us out of statutory debt. We have addressed our budget issues. We have, for this fiscal year, we have made some fairly dramatic cuts, and we are looking to make some more cuts and reduce programs this year. Our enrollment has stabilized. It is small, but we have stabilized, and I think that we fill a very important niche with the students in the area.
Superintendent Olson, what is the enrollment at Comfrey?
The enrollment is, as of last month was 154 K-12.
Okay. And what would be you project that to stay stable then at about 150?
I'm hoping to. We are regaining a number of the students that had open enrolled out. We're starting to get them to come back. So I'm hoping that we will stay with that number.
Superintendent, school districts generally do I'm thinking of an audit, but it's not called an audit, a census. And what are your projections as you look at the census going up?
Well, if all the students in our census would come to school, our enrollment would go up. We have some larger communities that are nearby, and we do anticipate some of them would open and roll out. Some are going to homeschool, but we're hoping that they are going to stay with the same approximate number that we do have.
And Superintendent, what are some of the larger communities right around
Comfrey? We have Springfield to our northwest, Sleepy Eye to the northeast, Butterfield and Mountain Lake are on our southern borders, and Red Rock is a little further on their west side.
Okay, and does Comfrey qualify for any sparsity?
We do not qualify for sparsity by a very small margin, but we do not qualify.
The distances are too
we're just a hair too close.
Just curious, as a chair of the Finance Committee or the K-12 Finance Committee, what one thing could the state do to help small schools?
I think there's a number of things. Most of it revolves, I think, around funding. We were hurt badly when we didn't get any of the extra funding for the general education percentage there for about 3 years. Special ed really hurts us a lot. When we have a special ed student, one of the things that would happen is we had a student that this year or last spring graduated was a cost savings of a little better than $35,000 to us for a special ed student, and there many of them have more. This last summer we had a student who had traumatic brain injury, and I'm not sure what the costs are going to be, but because of the number of specialists that have to visit with him, physical therapy and speech, it gets expensive. And I think on our ideas report, we're listed as getting $74,000 for special ed. And between our special ed teachers and the paras that we have, we're at $120,000 just in personnel expenses. And this doesn't include the specialists we have to bring in on for our school psychologists, our speech people, our physical therapy or the occupational therapy, the CODAs, any of those type of people that we have to hire through our service co-op. So special ed really has a big hit on us. And I think just being a rural district, the economies of size affects us. I think that... those are, I think, some of the important ones that really hurt us.
From the sound of it, special ed, you probably only receive maybe a third or a fourth of the reimbursement, or a third of your costs.
I don't think I could accurately tell you the number now, but it doesn't seem to cover. I know it doesn't cover all of it.
Sure. Are there any other questions that committee members have?
Mr. Chairman, could I stress one other? Comfrey has a a strong commitment to education. It would have been very easy for them 7 years ago to have not rebuilt their school when the tornado devastated it, but between insurance and some government help and local initiative, they have rebuilt a very fine school, and it remains a very good school system. In fact, I think some years they are at the top on student achievement, if I recall right. And one of the reasons they can safely transfer this money to the general fund is because they do have a new facility, essentially a new facility because of the tornado it went through.
Senator Saxhaug, you want to move?
So moved.
Senate files, Senator Saxhaug moves Senate file 42 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. A question? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you.
And you have Senate file 151.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
I'd ask John Brennan, the superintendent, and Leonard Runk, the instructor, to join me here.
Welcome. And Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, Senate file 151 would authorize the transfer of $81,000 from the Disability Assessment Fund account to the unrestricted general fund. And this school district.
Can you pull up the mic?
Can you hear me now? Senate file 151 would allow Red Rock Central School District to transfer $81,000 from the Disability Assessment account to the general fund. And I have Mr. John Brennan, the superintendent, is here to tell you a little bit about the Red Rock Central School District and why they feel they're able to do this.
Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you.
Give your name for the record, please.
Dr. John Brennan.
Please,
I am with the Red Rock Central School District for about 8 years now. Prior to that, I was a superintendent in the state of Nebraska for 20 years. I've been a special ed director for at least 7 years. What we're looking at doing, what we are requesting, is closing out our handicap accessible program account. It was generated by the taxpayers prior to our merger back in 96-97 school year. And it's been on our books ever since. Since that time, we have closed two of our buildings. We have two buildings presently standing, one in Lamberton and one in Jeffers. Jeffers is our elementary building. And we are confident that we could take care of the handicapped children if we have any non-ambulatory children attending our school system.
Superintendent Brennan, are all of the handicap accessible bills and needs paid off?
Yes.
I believe this particular levy goes back to, I think, in the 90s sometime. Yeah. A number of districts had some funds that were left over after they took care of their handicap accessible needs, and these funds have been, you know, either laying in a fund someplace or a number of them have been transferred. I think there are, you know, Mr. Nauman, how many of those are out there?
Mr. Chairman and members that have sat on this committee will recall that we have dealt with disabled access fund transfers in recent years on a fairly regular basis. Generally, what tends to, and I should hasten to add, there are some fund transfers that do generate a cost to this committee, and this one is one of those. It would carry an $81,000 levy impact because if the school district certified that its disabled access needs were completed, the department would take a levy reduction on its next levy cycle. So if we transferred this, that would, in a sense, change the color of the money, and we would need to carry a a tax increase in an equal amount on the property tax tracking, and then to remain at zero, we would have to buy down levies somewhere else. And that's just how it works. So,
Mr. Nauman, I see some blank stares, and I know the first few years we could it was very difficult to understand why, when there is money sitting in an account, in a fund, why that would cost the state anything, because the money was already in that fund. Can you, in very clear terms, explain why, if we allow this transfer to occur, why that would cost the state anything?
Mr. Chairman, are you suggesting the first go-around was not so clear?
Maybe we just need to
I'll do my best. Mr. Chairman and members, we have a permanent statute that says that levies that have been raised, and this primarily relates to debt service transfers, and when they have the bonds have been paid off, they would credit back to the taxpayers on a future levy. And this is another one of those levies that, in a sense, meets that test. It's a little bit different, but if the purpose for which the money was originally raised or taxed on the property taxpayers is no longer there, it would credit back on a future tax property tax statement. It would go back to the property taxpayers. What we are doing, if this committee approves this and it becomes law, is in a sense, notwithstanding that law, and we are allowing these dollars not to credit back, but instead to be spent by the school district. So, to our property tax tracking, and this is where it gets a little complicated, we carry that as a levy expenditure, an increase, because under current law it would credit back. Does that help?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, was this levy generated by one of the districts before the merger, or was it after?
I think it was a combination of both, ma'am.
So Mr. Senator Chairman, Olson. It would be a little messy to get it back to precisely the taxpayers who have
I
paid it.
I believe
well.
So, yes.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, could I have either Dr. Brennan or Mr. Runk tell you how many communities are involved in this combined school district?
Mr. Chair, I'm Leonard Runk. I've been a teacher at Red Rock Central. Prior to that was Sanborn Lamberton, and prior to that was the Lamberton District for 30 years. So I guess that's why I'm along today, because I have a bit of the history of the consolidation. The Red Rock Central School District was formed, consolidated by the voters in 1996. And I think, even though I'm not an administrator, I think the history on these funds goes back previously to the four other communities and three school districts prior to Red Rock Central. The districts were Storton Jeffers, which was one consolidated district from back in the 70s, and then the Sanborn School District and the Lamberton School District, which all came together in 1996. At that time of the consolidation, the district closed the building in Sanborn and closed the building in Storton, Minnesota. And at the present time, we have a high school campus in Lamberton and a elementary campus in Jeffers. And the combined enrollment, K-12 in our district, is slightly over 500 students.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay.
So,
you need a motion, no?
Senator Olson, I move Senate File 151. And I don't believe there are any amendments needed. Okay. Senator Olson moves Senate File 151 to be laid on the table. Any questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Mr. Runk. And Senator Betzel, Senate File 110.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 110 is a bill relating to the Spring Lake Park School District. And in order to understand the request for lease levy, I got to give you a little bit of background. Spring Lake Park School District is located in the city of Spring Lake Park, which is a fully developed suburb, but it also covers part of the city of Blaine, which is a very rapidly growing suburb. In fact, it's got 4,000 homes now that didn't exist 4 years ago, the previous time I'd run for re-election. It's rapidly growing. And, in fact, they're even going to have to build a new grade school in there. This has long-range effects, and it's going to affect the high school, which they have plans to expand it because they've got a lot of students coming down the road. The particular issue before us is the fact that there's an administration building located right next to the high school. And the Department of Education has told the Spring Lake Park School District that in order to expand, that administrative building has to go. There's just not a big enough footprint for it. So that building is gone. Now, the original plans were to just sort of build some administrative spaces into the new high school when the expansion happens. It so happened that about a block away from the high school and from the administrative building, there was a new Health Partners building that's become available. The school district has bought it. And the original plan was to use that for alternative learning. But as they got looking into it, they realized it'd probably be easier and cheaper to use a medical building for office space than to convert it over into classroom space. So the decision has been made, since the administrative building has to be demolished anyway, to move a block away and just move their administrative facilities into that Health Partners building, which they already have purchased, and they are going to be moving into it. Of course, if they had used it for alternative learning, you know, they probably could go ahead and lease levy would not be an issue. But since it's only going to be used for office purposes, you know, that's where the issue comes up here. As I say, one way or the other, their current building has to go because they do have to expand the high school, and it's just in the way of the space that they need to do that. They had looked at other issues, trying to mix and match, put some administrative functions as well as educational in the same building, and they just decided we might as well just use it for straight administrative purposes. I do have Jack Westrom, the Director of Business Services from the Spring Lake Park School District, you know, who can further amplify on this, answer any questions, but that's the issue before you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Betzel. Senator Olson has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bissell, you said that the district bought the building from the Health Partners, but you're going for a lease levy. I don't understand.
Sure. My name's Jim Westrom, and I'd be happy to respond.
Mr. Westrom?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, currently we have a comprehensive facilities improvement plan in place, and so the Health Partners building was originally purchased as a staging area. We currently will be actually demolishing certain parts of our high school, and we were planning to move the students over to the Health Partners building on a temporary basis. And throughout that process, it became apparent to us that it would be better use of funds and better for students overall if we actually move the administrative offices over to the Health Partners building and retain the students on the high school campus. So we actually have already purchased the Health Partners building, and we already have lease levy authority for instructional purposes, and we actually have some classrooms in that facility currently for early childhood family education.
So Mr. Chairman, I understand what you were doing, but I was just understanding how the lease, if you're leasing a building for administrative purposes that you already have bought, that's the part that's puzzling me. How does the lease levy work if you already own the building?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, actually, we partnered with a local financial institution, and they purchased the building, and then we actually have an operating lease arrangement with the financial company that purchased the building. So we actually have a lease with them, and they actually own the building. We make the lease payments to them.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, is it Mr. Watson?
Westrom,
yes. Excuse me. Is that a commercial enterprise that acquired it?
Actually, it'd be similar to a bank, but yes, it's.
Then Mr. Chairman, a follow-up. Do you then, when you lease, are you paying property tax on that building because of its ownership?
Actually, we applied for exempt status, and so that property is no longer on the property tax rolls.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not sure, Mr. Westrom, if I'm entirely clear about the trail of transactions there. You have some educational programs in the building, early childhood programs, did you say, or if you could just expand on that, and then I'm sure Mr. Norman's got a question.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Actually, as I mentioned before, we currently had a need to move some of our students while we were doing renovations and remodeling and demolishing of existing facilities. We currently do not have anything in there, but we're in the process of we acquired the building in July of 2006. We received levy authority for instructional purposes, and we actually are in the process of adding classrooms to temporarily house our early childhood family education students. So that's why we already have the facility. And then in our long-range plan, instead of converting the rest of the, basically their examining rooms, instead of converting the rest of the examining rooms into classrooms, it would be more cost-effective to convert the examining rooms into offices for administrative functions.
Okay, I think Mr. Nauman can explain. We've done some, we've approved some leases for administrative facilities, like I think Recori is one of them. But there's some language stipulations that we added to that, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and members, in the 2006 legislative session, this committee and was ultimately signed into law, approved some lease levy authority for administrative space for the Recori and Faribault school districts. There were a couple of additional provisos. Because the committee was somewhat concerned about the costs associated with those spaces, it added some language that said that the district must demonstrate to the satisfaction of the commissioner that the administrative space would in fact be less expensive an instructional space that the district would otherwise have leased if this authority wasn't provided. And the commissioner was further granted authority to deny this lease authority if the district couldn't satisfactorily demonstrate that there would be a reduction in costs associated with the lease, the administrative lease, as opposed to instructional lease. Instructional lease authority exists in law. So the committee has taken that approach, I believe, on three occasions. I've got the 2006 law in front of me, but memory serves that we've also done it for Chaska, and I think that was in 2005.
We did it for Waconia.
Maybe that was Waconia. It. It was Waconia. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Mr. Westrom, if you could, I presume it would be more economical for the school district, but, I mean, does that...
Mr. Chair, I would agree that it is more economical to transfer or to convert these spaces into administrative offices instead of classrooms.
So you would not object to having that same language basically be part of it?
I would not object. Okay. I believe we can demonstrate that easily.
And Mr. Chair, given Senator the fact Bessel. It was the Department of Education that insisted that this, the current administration building, you know, have to go, you know, basically they're quite aware of the situation. And so I think that, you know, they're we would be in agreement to that stipulation.
Right. It's, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, you said in your response to my question about examining whether you should use it for instructional space that it would actually be more costly to move administration into the school building and displace instructional space to this because you'd have to remodel for it? Or did I hear you wrong?
Mr. Westrom?
Sure. Senator Olson, Mr. Chair, that is correct. We actually were going to move the district offices into existing classrooms in the high school on the lower level, kind of out of the way, and then actually renovate these examining rooms into classrooms for those students that we would displace, And now we're saying it makes more sense to leave the students in the high school in the existing classrooms and to move the administration over to the medical building.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, this may be an intangible benefit, but certainly keeping students all together on one campus without having some in one space and having to transport them and dealing with the safety concerns of moving students from one place to another would have benefit also.
Very good.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you. Mr. Westrom, so when the whole project is done, it's just administration in that building then? Is that accurate?
Mr. Westrom?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, yes, that is correct.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, is Spring Lake Park experiencing some decline so that at some point would you see not needing this building? Or are you looking at the lease as a lease purchase that ultimately you will own the building?
Mr. Western.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, actually our school district is currently experiencing significant enrollment increases.
It is.
Over the last 5 years, we've gone from 4,100 students to 4,600 students currently. And we anticipate probably topping it out at about 5,000 students in the next 5 years. In the future, that would provide us with options.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that's the city of Spring Lake Park is not growing, but Blaine is growing, and that's the area that is rapidly growing. They're already building a new grade school there, and the future students are going to have to go to high school at the location we're talking about, which is why the high school has to expand.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Scheid, you want to move that?
Yes, I do.
Sorry, Senator Wergen, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, actually, I was going to move that for possible inclusion. So.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly defer to Senator
Wergen. All right.
Although Senator I strongly Wergen, support it.
Senator Wergen moves that Senate File 110 be as, and I think what we'll do is we'll direct staff to come up with the language to add to that, be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. Any other questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Betzel, and thank you, Mr. Westrom. And
Mr. Chair, my witness is not quite here yet for my next bill, so I'll be happy to just wait until my witness shows up and
okay.
Move on to other ones.
I see Senator Kubley is here. And welcome, Senator Kubley and Superintendent Munsterman. You look like repeat players.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There is a handout that's coming around for Senate File 161. I guess there are quite a few new members on the committee this year, Mr. Chair. So, you know, others of you who've been here will remember this issue has been here before, but, you know, the Lacaparral Valley High School is seeking a levy authority for a severance. You know, it's an issue that's been dealt with in the past. Around the year 2000, Mesabi East did receive this authority for that district. So, you know, I think there is a precedent for it as well. But with me today is Bob Munsterman, the superintendent at Lacaparral Valley High.
Welcome. Thank you, Senator Kubley. Welcome, Superintendent. Give your name for the record.
Okay. I'm Robert Munsterman, the superintendent with Lacaparral Valley School District. I'd like to thank Chairman Stumpf and the committee for allowing us to speak with you again today. As Mr. Kubley has indicated, we have been here before with a bill similar to this. The problem obviously has not gone away for us. On the handout that you did receive, you'll see that our district does have a very rich history of cooperative efforts, dating way back to the Secondary Facilities Grant Act when we did form a joint powers high school, Since that time, we have gone through several reorganizations and finally culminating that in 1995 with the combination of all of our districts into one single district. Along with each of those cooperative efforts, obviously, we were looking for efficiency, and efficiency usually means you cut staff. And unfortunately, most of those staff that get cut are young staff, and as a result, we have ended up with a very senior staff. We did, with the consolidation in 1995, there was a severance levy that accompanied that for those people who did lose their jobs. Again, as I indicated, the majority of those people were young people. We still have the senior staff with us, and we do have severance obligations for those people as well. As you can see on the sheet, it does give you some of the problems that have resulted from the cooperative efforts. We have to designate and reserve funds for severance, as that is an obligation that does come directly from the general fund. And as a result, it has impacted what is happening in our classrooms. Coupling that with declining enrollment, as you can see in the middle of the page, since we started our cooperative efforts, we have lost nearly 40% of our students. And at the same time, we have lost close to 50% of our staff. So we have tried to be as efficient as possible. We have had to make reductions of less senior staff because of declining enrollment, which again then contributes to the fact that we do have a very senior staff. You'll see the anticipated retirements within the next 5 years. About one-third of our staff, or probably more, will qualify for retirement. And as a result, we do have a severance obligation that goes along with that of about $1.5 million. And then in 2017, which is 10 years down the road, 45% of our current staff, and our obligation at that time will have increased to about $1.7 million. That gets to be a problem for us. If you see at the bottom of that front page, as we have designated those funds to cover that obligation, you can see what has happened to our fund balance. And for instance, in 2001-2002, which was the last year we had the levy authority, we had almost $1 million in our undesignated unreserved fund balance and about $233,000 in severance reserved. Then as we started to designate in order to meet that obligation, you can see what has happened. And basically, we've kept our, if we hadn't had to reserve for that designation, for that obligation, our fund balance would have remained fairly stable. In spite of the declining enrollment. So we have operated very efficiently and have met the needs of our students. In fact, we've managed to get by without cutting a great deal of programs, and we've kept our academic programs very strong, have never had any difficulty meeting AYP. Our students are, we're always earning 3, 4, and 5 stars on the state report card. The backside of that sheet does give you a little bit of facts about our district. We're geographically a very large district, 765 square miles, but obviously a low populated area. The school tax is generally fairly reasonable, I would say, based on the average of our per $100,000 of home value compared to that of the area schools, other schools in our area, and to the state average. The community has been very supportive. We have, in the past, since the cooperative efforts started, we've had 4 referendum levies, the last one being in the fall of 2005. They have all passed. 3 of them have passed in excess of 60%. So the community has been very supportive. We've been fair to them, and they've been fair to us. So basically, we're looking for the authority to levy or severance to offset that obligation, so we no longer have to take money from our general fund to cover that obligation. We do have contract language in place that will remove the majority of our retirement benefits and severance benefits from our contract by 2014. So we have also made efforts in that effect to try to prevent this from growing to a bigger problem.
Thank you, Superintendent. What there's several things that seem to be going on here. One is the very sharp decline in enrollment over a period of years. Can you enlighten us a little bit more on is the decline in the enrollment, is that just a natural demographics taking place, or are you losing students to open enrolling, or just what's going on?
Senator Stump, the problem is just simply declining population. Our district includes all of or most of Waukeparl County and part of Big Stone County, which are the two fastest declining counties in the state. I believe they decline at 10% during the last census. They had declined by 10% or more. And that is continuing to happen out in our area. Obviously, there is not a lot of industry other than agriculture, and as a result, it's difficult to hold young people into the area.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kugley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think, you know, with some of that material that the state's demographer provided for us, too, if you looked at the Senate districts that have lost the largest number of people in the last 5 years, mine was right up there at the top. I think Senator Tomasoni's was listed higher by some factor and how they factored that in, but he started out with less people than I did. But my district has actually lost more people in the last 5 years than any other Senate district in the state.
Okay. Have Superintendent, have you lost students to South Dakota?
We have about 18 students that attend across the border in Ravillo. Our school district runs right up to the South Dakota border. Those students are about 6 miles from that community and about 18 from where our high school is located. So it's simply a geographic inconvenience issue for those parents.
Okay. And then
no.
One other question I have is, on the negotiations for health insurance, or where was it? The current language has been negotiated to phase out retiree benefits after 2014. What, and I think that's a problem up on the, in the Northeast too, in the Iron Range, has that they have had some very good benefits for retirees in the area of healthcare. And there's obviously nothing wrong with it, except that it's extremely costly and one that they hadn't been able to predict the cost of. What's the history of that, and why the 2014 versus, let's say, 2012 or something?
Senator Stump, we set that up about, I believe it's 3 contracts ago, so it would be 6 years ago. We did bring in at that time, we had not had a matching 403B plan. We brought that into place with the understanding that we would, over a period of time, phase out the retiree insurance benefits at the rate of $2,000 per year so that there is a maximum pool. At that time, and it still is current, the district would contribute $4,350 per year to the retiree until they reach the age of qualifying for Medicare. And we have, we calculated at that time what the maximum they could draw over approximately 9 years of retirement from age 56 or 57 to age 65. And that has been reducing at $2,000 per year since that time. And then the last 4 years, it will actually reduce by $5,000 per year per retirement. So that is why it phases out. That's just the way it calculated out through that phase out to 2014. And we also then have capped the total amount of severance and early retirement at $20,000. So if they have received 403B matching funds, and if they're with the district long enough that reaches the caps, the $20,000, then that phases out. And at by 2014, those will all have phased out of our system.
Are the benefits that you've negotiated, are they similar to the surrounding districts?
Yes, all of the nearly all school districts in the state have some type of severance or retirement package. They come in various forms. Some will take a percentage of the last year's salary. Some will include prorated insurance benefits, and there are a few that have full insurance benefits until Medicare age. And those districts are as well trying to phase out some of those obligations.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Munsterman, I was trying to follow what you were saying about how much they were being scaled back annually. What did they start at, and were they just for the individual teacher who was retiring, or were they for their whole family? Were you covering the whole family?
Mr. Munsterman.
The contract, as I indicated, designated $4,350 per year, whether that covered a single policy or a family policy. As the premium went up, that stayed constant. And we froze it at the $4,350, so it no longer continued to grow at all. At that time, I believe it probably would have covered about half of a family policy. So over the 9 years, over a nine-year period, you were looking at around $40,000 of total obligation for insurance premiums.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions that committee members have? Thing I noticed is that on line 1.7, that you're requesting for a period of 10 years that this levy would be, that you'd be allowed to use this levy. If this phase out of the health insurance and severance goes to 2014 and the levy would kick in 2009, that period would be, basically 5 years would cover that period instead of 10.
Yeah, that's true, but the obligation will continue beyond that point because that's paid out each year of the individual's retirement beyond that point. So we would need to get to their age 65 in order to cover all of those obligations. So if they retire at age 57, we would have 8 years of obligation that we would still need to pay the $4,350 for that year. So if they say they retired in 2009, it would actually be like 2017 before that obligation is fully covered.
What's the outer year or the is that the maximum? Is 2017?
Not necessarily. It depends upon the age of the person when they retire, and at what point when they reach age 65. They don't necessarily have to retire at age 56 and so on. They can go, and more teachers are continuing to teach until they're 62 or 65. the obligation will continue out to that point, keeping in mind also that the $150,000 per year does not cover our entire obligation. We're only looking to cover part of it with that.
Well, the language that was put in statute for Mesabi East was set at 5 years. The other thing is, you ran a referendum in 2005. Was any of this thought out, that instead of the $1,100 per pupil, if you had ran that referendum for $1,300 or $1,400 per pupil, that would have covered that? Was there thought that went into that?
We did discuss that with the board. Did discuss it at that time. They, to be honest with you, they felt that levying for strictly academic purposes was what we were, you know, we would prefer to do, to keep that operating levy separate from levying for severance and for retirement purposes. So as to not to muddy the waters as to where that money would be designated, where it would go to, what it would be used for.
But the taxpayers are going to end up paying it anyway.
Yes, that's true.
So it's...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley?
It seems to me that there is another piece that Superintendent Munsterman hasn't mentioned. Because of declining enrollment, I mean, I don't think that there would be a negative impact on the taxpayers of the district either. You know, the declining enrollment, you know, reduces their levy authority. And so, you know, you also you have a break even in this situation, I think, probably at the highest. At least that would be my understanding. You probably understand that better than I do.
Well, I was just, I guess the train of thought that I was going through is that in 2005, when you ran the referendum for $1,100, if you would have increased it by $250 more, then the taxpayers could have decided whether they wanted to pay for that or not. I mean, they're going to, if we give them the authority, they're going to pay for it. But they, what'll happen is their taxes will go up. And, I mean, they probably won't know exactly why, because the legislature gave them the authority rather than they're voting for it themselves. So, Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, Superintendent, on line 1.8, the language discusses early retirement benefits for licensed employees who retired as a result of the consolidation that was effective July 1996. Can you walk me through that logic in light of the continuing obligation that you discussed earlier? In other words, what I'm getting at is, if an employee retired in 2009, using the example that you had before, it sounds like from this language that it's retirement as a result of the consolidation. So are you still dealing with retirements as a result of the consolidation that could potentially be effective in 2009? I'm trying to align that with the timing of the obligation.
Superintendent?
I understand your question there, and I guess the line of thought there is that the fact that we have this large pool of people that are retiring at this time is because of the fact that we have a very senior staff. The logic behind severance is it's based on the premise that your enrollment will stay stable, and that people will, you have a natural attrition of people retiring and young people coming in, and that your enrollment and your revenue stays stable. And obviously in our fact that has not happened. So the fact that we have the senior staff is a direct result of the consolidation. You know, granted those people that were working at that time that were of retirement age have retired since that time. But this is still a result of that. The senior staff is a result of those consolidation efforts. To address the levy issue also, as you are aware, when the referendum levy is taxed against the people, it's based on a per pupil unit, and as that declines, obviously our revenue source dries up as well, so we have less revenue source. So as a result, it's not a stable levy, whereas the levy that we're talking about here would be a stable levy that we know we can count on in order to address that obligation. The obligation is not going to decrease. The obligation will stay the same, so we needed to be looking at a stable revenue source for that.
Okay. Any other questions that members have? I know this is a kind of a tough issue because there's quite a number of districts that are in a similar predicament. They negotiated fairly long-standing commitments in the area of retirees. Straightforward. Okay. Senator Scheid, do you want to move that?
Mr. Senate Chairman, final? I was hoping you'd ask.
Okay.
Yes,
we may,
Mr. Chairman, of course.
We may want to adjust this language a little bit, but Senator Scheid moves that Senate file number 161 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Kubley, and thank you, Superintendent.
Yep. Thank you.
Senator Betzel, go back to your Senate file 271.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair and members. This is an issue that this budget division has seen before. Just a brief description. In the city of Fridley, there is a community center that used to be a school building, and because of declining enrollment, the decision was made to turn it into a community education center, which the school district still uses, and they have an agreement with the city of Fridley, and the city of Fridley has come on in. They've made some improvements. They use part of the space, they lease part of it, and it's a joint effort between both the city of Fridley and the Fridley School District. Unfortunately, the situation that they've got is that although the building is used all the time and is quite busy, they just cannot keep up with an aging building and pay for the upkeep of the building as well as pay for the programming that is done all the time in there. They charge all the fees they can. They do everything, but it's frankly an old building, and they need some assistance in levy authority in order to help pay for the building. I do have... Celine from the finance director of the Fridley School District, who can further explain that.
Thank you, Mr. Butzholz. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. If you could give your name for the
Sandy
record.
Sandy Celine.
Thank you.
And as Senator Butzholz explained, there is cost to operating the community ed building that far exceeds what the city is reimbursing us for. And we do not have the lease levy authority since, of course, we own the building, so we are not able to lease levy for these operating costs and the cost of the building. We try to subsidize from the general fund what we can, but of course the general fund is in need of funds also, so it's hitting the community ed departments pretty hard and the community ed fund pretty hard. We have been carrying a deficit for the last 2 years in the community ed fund balance, and about $60,000 of this was contributable to the operating cost of the building. The ALC does habitat this building also and reimburses us for a portion of these operating costs, but again, the operating costs do exceed what the city and the ALC is contributing.
Excuse me, Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is an issue familiar to me. I think I a few years ago tried to do something to help. There are other school districts that are using their older buildings particularly for community ed, not necessarily with the co-location, but just entirely for community ed, ECFE, and so on, and are facing the same kind of dilemma. And we're looking for something just even to help with some of the utilities, if they could get a levy to do that. Because I know Roseville is one. Orono has the old district building in Maple Plain that's their Discovery Center, using it wonderfully, but just having one dickens of a time making a go of it. And what they can do is they could sell it to somebody else and then lease it back, and then they can levy the lease at much higher cost. And so if I wish we could establish some policy. I know that the levy thing is a big hang-up if you've got zero levy targets, but we were trying to search and see if there was any other way, but yours is not the only building that is affected by that, and yet I think what you're proposing is an economical way of approaching it to a limit. Now, you're using 30 times the pupil units. We were just trying to say be able to levy the utility costs. Whatever. I'm interested in our getting a resolution to this, even in a broader scope than just for one district, if it's at all possible.
Mr. Chair, and Sarah Olson, we've been here before, and we've even commented that the solution, if we wanted to go that way, it'd be quite simple, because the city has a partnership with the school district. If we would just sell the building to the city for a buck, we'd be there. But I think that would be seen as a sham transaction simply to get at the lease levy. The school district doesn't want to go there. The city doesn't want to go there, but we could do it.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, any ideas of how we can resolve this?
Senator Olson, I think the some of the fear on the part of, you mentioned it, one of the issues, and that is we've been operating under a zero levy target for a number of years on the Senate side. But I think the other fear that's kind of the unknown is, you know, what is kind of that sleeping giant need out there, and how, you know, how extensively would this be used?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have somebody is trying to collect an updated list of those districts that have that kind of circumstance, that where they have, instead of disposing of an old building, they're using it well. I know there's a couple of them. I think Minnetonka has the Deep Haven one where they're using their English as the second language, their adult basic education, their ECFE. Some wonderful things going on in this one of the historic buildings in the area, rather than disposing of it or tearing it down. I know Roseville was hanging on by their fingernails a year or so ago. I've talked to Mindy Greiling because wanted to see if there's anything to get an update. I haven't had a chance to sit down and talk with her in depth, but I know that there are clearly some that are doing this. They're hanging on, but just barely. And as Senator Betzold has said, they could in fact sell it and lease it back, and our law allows that. It would have greater property tax impact on the citizens than if we could do something more straightforward that it would be far less costly. in order to allow them to keep it in ownership and but just be able to have some help with some of their basic expenses to do it.
I think that's correct, and I think we've been moving a little bit or bit by bit in terms of the administrative buildings. Mr. Nauman brings up a good point. If you look on the proposed legislation on line 1.7, there isn't a real clear definition of what the levy portion would be for. So after operating on line 1.7, if we would add the language, the school district portion of, because here you have a school, you have a facility that there's multiple units or governmental units that are actually using it. And in this case, we're talking about the school district portion of that, of the use of that or the levy. So the language would read on line 1.7, may levy an amount equal to the cost of operating the school district portion of its community center building. Everybody have that? Senator Scheid moves that language be added on line 1.7.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nauman.
I should mention that the fiscal note on this bill makes that assumption, that it's the school district portion only.
And the fiscal note is what?
Mr. Chairman, the levy impact on this bill would be $177,000. In taxes payable 2008, that's fiscal note 9, $89,000 and $85,000. It's higher in 09 because it would be a double levy. The language in Section 2 allows the district to levy for fiscal year 08 and then recognize that money backwards. Correction, levy it in taxes payable 08 and then recognize it in fiscal 08.
Okay. Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chairman, if that is what is being allowed, what difference does it make? Is it with the language of the co-location part of it? In other words, is co-location a contingent for allowing them to levy for the cost of their share of the operating expenses?
Senator Olson, if we did not add that language, it would not be entirely clear that when you read that sentence, may levy an amount equal to the cost of operating its community center building. That's a broader purpose. The fiscal note is basically an estimate. I mean, it's not capped basically at 177. I mean,
Mr. Chairman, there's some language in here that caps it at amount of the cost of operating or $30 times its adjusted units. The issue, Senator Olson, that I was concerned about and Mr. Melcher and I visited about was the bill providing authority to levy for the entire cost, in other words, the city's costs as well, or just the school district portion of those costs?
Mr. Chairman, I understand that, and I have no problem with that. But would there be consideration to approving this for them to levy for their school district portion of the costs only because they are co-locating services with the city? If the city backed out and the whole building was used by the school district for their community ed, would this still apply?
I think so.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, it says that on 1.9 to 111 that the commissioner could deny or revoke it if they're not co-locating. So I would think you might want to...
Mr. Chairman, do we want that language in there? That's the point.
Okay,
that's
the question.
That's what I'm getting at.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
Wouldn't that then double what they need? And then you'd be talking about a double levy. If the city pulled out of the agreement, then the whole burden would fall on the school district.
What's their billing?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if this helps or if it just confuses matters, but the addition of the language that the committee moved on line 1.7 was simply to clarify that because there is co-location going on in this particular building, there are city costs and there are school district costs. This is the education committee, and so it was thought by the department as well, and I agreed that it made sense to specify that this bill was authorizing authority for just the school district portions that the school district would have levy authority for. If there was no I did further make the assumption that because the school district, that the language was dependent upon lines 1.9 through 111, the co-location was an important rationale for why this committee was considering this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'm wondering about the issue, the situations that Senator Olson has worked on before probably weren't co-location situations. They were just old buildings that the district owned and was making good use of. Mm-hmm. And they had an issue with upkeep and expenses, I'm guessing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to establish whether the only times we'd want to do this is if they're co-locating, or whether if a building, you know, with a little help could be stay in public hands rather than go through the temptation of adding greater burden to the taxpayers in order to keep it it utilized rather than trying to even sell or build new. There's a lot of issues here.
Oh, there's a number of them. My assessment would be is let's find out from that survey that you were talking about as to what the need is out there.
Okay. That's a good idea.
This legislation is specific to Senator Betzel's area in the Fridley School District. So I think what we should do is act on this particular piece of legislation, and then I know everybody's thinking around the table as to how they might solve the other issue. And I think it's a legitimate issue, but I think this year in particular, when we're all about trying to lower property taxes, we don't want to create a huge opportunity for many other things to happen unless we really have a clear understanding of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
I was just wondering, what would be the amount they could levy per pupil? What's the maximum lease levy aid?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roblin, the lease levy authority is capped at $100 unless there's a few conditions under which school districts could exceed that amount. But the threshold is $100.
For pupil.
Okay. All right. Senator Wergen moves that Senate File 271 as amended be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you,
Senator Betzel, and thank you for your witness. Next we have Senator Wergen. Senate File 790.
He was here before.
Mr. Chair, sometimes there's a motive for moving the previous bill. This is kind of like same song, second verse. Senate
Senator
files.
Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 790 comes from the Onamia School District, and I do have a handout for committee members if I could get someone to take care of that for me, please. In 2003, the city of Onamia and the school district, the Onamia School District, got together and worked hard to figure out what was the best solution for some of the school and community needs simultaneously. As a result of getting together and doing that and trying to work community outreach into the education system, because this is a school district that has approximately 40% of its representation in minority communities, they decided that the most cost-effective way to handle both the issues of the school district and the community was to build a facility together. And that facility is called the ROC, the Ralph Olson Center. And that facility was built in a very good manner to be cost-effective into the future. For instance, they used geothermal heating and some very progressive things that would minimize the cost as it went into the future. The other thing about this building is that I have been there several times, and it is an incredibly well-used building. Early childhood education is there. Adult basic education is there. Community events are held there. School events are held there. It is busy a lot of the time. It is very cost-effective to operate, but again, it's the same situation as we had in the last bill. It's a co-location facility, and so we have the same thing. You could say the city owns it and lease it back, but this is a more cost-effective way to deal with it. So the Onamia School District is asking for a $35 times levy times its adjusted marginal cost pupil unit, or the cost of operating the school portion, whichever is less. And that's what this bill is. And in view of the last bill, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an oral amendment on line 1.7. After operating, insert the words, the school district portion.
Senator Wergen moves that on line 1.7, after operating, the words... the school district's portion of be added. On that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would generate about $26,000, $27,000 for the school district, something that is much needed. The cost per resident is very minimal, approximately 50 cents. Per individual in the district. So it isn't a great cost per individual, but it would be a great cost, a great help in a school district that has very low property wealth and is dealing with several issues as time moves on. And I have with me Superintendent John Varner to add to that.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairman Stump and the committee.
Welcome. If you could give your name for the record, please.
You have to introduce yourself with your name.
Good morning. I'm John Varner, Superintendent of Schools, Onamia Public Schools.
Welcome.
And thank you for having me here this morning. This co-location is a situation where we don't have an old building. We actually have two new buildings. We did work hard, as Senator Wergen said, to make this as green as possible, and it's almost unique in a town of 900 that a school district and the city could come together and create such a great facility. In the Lions Club Center, which is the city portion, we have the Onamia Fitness Center with about 160 members. The school district, the city, the hospital, and Nexus Corporation, a not-for-profit educational firm in town, all went together and ponied up money to buy the equipment. We're running 7th and 8th grade basketball practices at times down there when we get overloaded up at the 712 facility. We've had funerals in this facility. You have to understand, in a town of 900, there just aren't too many places that'll hold 200 people or more. And it's just been a wonderful thing. And like I say, I think fairly unique in small town rural Minnesota. Our levy has gone down the last 2 years. We didn't have to hold a truth and taxation hearing last year. I would have loved to, but our operating levy failed for the second time in a row. And when we say 50 cents, we're actually talking about 50 cents per property homeowner rather than per person.
and I don't think that's an undue tax burden. The Rolf Olson Center, the community education part of this dual facility, is being paid for on a lease levy, and that tax impact is about $1.50. So I completely understand that the Senate wants to hold levies down, but I can slip in 50 cents per taxpayer and still watch my taxes go down in my district. So that's a little bit different situation. I'm not really trying to totally separate from Fridley, but this is truly an apples to oranges situation. We are cutting $500,000 from our operating budget this year, which means I'm losing teachers. If I have to close the Rolf Olson Center, that's going to impact everybody, but my school board's sitting there saying something's got to give. Something has to give. So in my mind, people drive through Onamia. They're on their way to Lake Mille Lacs. We have $800,000 vacation properties and lakeshore homes. We have $8,000 mobile homes. It's a really tough district for that. We have a high percentage of retirees who, interestingly enough, are using the Rolf Olson Center, but just don't want to raise their taxes to pay for it. So we're in a bind. And we are in rural Minnesota, and I think that's a little bit of a difference when you look at the amount of money that can be raised in the metro area as opposed to the Onamia School District.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, that's all we have. If there are any questions or anything.
All right. We heard a lot of the – I know each individual circumstance is a little bit different, but from the committee's perspective, I think what we're interested in, and I think the co-location aspect of it is very important. There's a lot of legislative agenda in the past trying to promote co-location, so. But I do want to remind members that I think this does become kind of a little bit of a camel's nose under the tent. And if you just take the mathematics of $50,000 per school district times all the school districts in the state of Minnesota, that comes to about seven. No, but I mean, some districts will levy for more than $50,000. But that comes to about a little over 17 million.
So. Mr. Chairman, this one is barely the breath out of the nostrils.
Chairman, I would like to add that we were in the running for Edmond, Minnesota's Cooperative Local Facilities Grants and the bonding bill, and that bonding bill died. We were the poster child, basically, for that co-location and cooperation between city and school districts. And it was devastating to us because, you know, we could almost taste it. And Admin Minnesota loved the proposal and it had stamped the approval on that. So I think the emphasis should be more on co-location and cooperation between municipalities and school districts, and less maybe on minimal tax impact. Now, I can see that camel's nose starting to include hockey arenas and everything else, but write tight language, and it won't happen.
Oh, yeah. We'll work on that. So,
thank you.
Senator Wergen moves that Senate File 790 as amended be recommended to or be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Senator Wergen and Mr. Varner, Superintendent. And next we have Senator Lynch, Senate File 568.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good
members.
Morning.
It is a pleasure to be a part of your committee today.
I'm here with Senate File 568, which speaks to property tax certification for the Rochester School District. I'm joined at the table today by Rochester Superintendent Jerry Williams, and I have to tell you all that it is a real treat for me to be sitting here at the table once again with Superintendent Williams as we try to continue to work together to do good things for kids. This is an issue that I know inside, outside, and quite closely because, as you all know, I come to the Senate from the Rochester School Board. Before we begin the discussion, I have an author's amendment that I think has been distributed, and I would like to offer that first.
Move that.
Senator Scheid moves the AO7-0085 amendment. I think it's been handed out, so everybody has it. On line one, delete 31 and insert 8.
That's correct. It's just a change in the date.
Line 1. Oh, line 9. Okay.
So rather than read October 31st, it will read October 8th.
Okay. On Senator Scheid's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you. And so with that, I am going to... I think the best way that we can tell the story of this is to have you hear from Superintendent Williams. I'll ask Mr. Williams to make some comments.
Welcome, Superintendent Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Williams, and I'm very proud to represent the Rochester Public Schools as its superintendent. Last spring, we sought and received legislative permission for a one-year pilot that gave us a one-week extension beyond the mandated date of September 30th to certify our preliminary property tax levy to the county auditor. This was done with the approval of two county auditors that we certify to, Olmsted County and a little piece of Wabasha County. In this case, it was an extension until October 8th to certify our preliminary levy. We sought this slight extension beyond the September 30th date, in order to give us more time to accurately certify a levy to our taxpayers. In fact, this past September, we were still getting adjustments from the Minnesota Department of Education up through September 30th. So we had the extension of 1 week, and it worked extremely well. Our business office and I had time to review state figures, to seek additional information where needed, and be sure that the preliminary tax figure we were asking our school board to certify was as accurate as it could possibly be. We did not have to certify the maximum merely to protect ourselves from last-minute adjustments from the state or to cover ourselves. It worked great, exceptionally so, and was well received in our community. Last fall, we certified the levy on the evening of Tuesday, October 3rd, and reported to our county auditors the morning of October 4th. This fall, if this proposed legislation becomes law, we would certify at a school board meeting the evening of October 2nd, the first Tuesday of the month when we hold our meetings, and report to the auditors the morning of October 3rd. I've been in touch with both auditors within the past week, and they have no problem with this brief one-week extension. The State Department of Education typically takes through the end of September to get the accurate information to us, which is very appropriate. This gives us that little extension beyond September 30th, where we can then accurately certify the levy to our public. This is a policy change that does not cost anybody any money. Let me repeat that. This is a policy change that does not cost anybody any money. I sincerely appreciated the support of the committee last spring, and I ask again for your continued support of something that works very, very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Nauman and I were just visiting about whether this particular piece of legislation should, it actually is a tax issue.
more so than an education issue. And I'm sure the tax committee would, you know, they have, I mean, we could actually, I suppose, send this on it on its own, or, huh?
They do that.
Versus holding it and keeping it in the education bill. I mean, either way, the education bill goes to the tax committee too. But I think that sending it on its own allows the tax committee to some time to talk about the change, and maybe this is a change they want to make statewide. You know, it's a possibility anyway.
Senator Stumpf, I would. I'd be pleased to carry this forward to the tax committee, particularly since it's a non-appropriation thing.
So the route would be to send this, the motion would be to send it to the finance committee, the full finance committee, and then it'll go from there to the tax committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Superintendent Williams?
Just as a point of information, it was the tax committee, Senate tax committee, that I appeared before last spring when Senator Pogomirler was chairing the committee. But I do want to point out that this is good for all school districts. All school districts can learn from this, and particularly with the technology that's out there and available now. Changing the date from September 30th to October 8th is just it's nothing. With you just push enter on something, and I will say that Senator Lynch, because we had this, was a member of a school board last fall that, with up-to-date accurate data, was able to do a preliminary tax certification of 0.55%, which became part of board action in December that she voted yes for, of actually certifying the levy with more work at 0.28%. It worked well for us, and our chamber is supportive, and our school board is very supportive.
Mr. Melcher, or Dr. Melcher, if you could maybe just share a comment or two about if you see any impact that this might have if it was applied across the state as a statewide policy. Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Tom Melcher with the Department of Education, and I agree with the superintendent's assessment of the situation. I know that the truth in taxation timelines are very tight, both for the school districts and for the counties. My recollection is that last year when this issue was raised, that there were some counties that still had some objections to moving the time back because that gave them a little bit less time. But we've had a number of years since the truth in taxation went into place, and one would think that with the enhancements we've had in technology since then, it's something that at least should be looked at. I think it would be very beneficial for school districts if they could have a little bit more time to review these levies, and it would help the taxpayers in terms of having a more accurate number on their truth in taxation notices.
So really there are no, I mean, unless some individual district would raise an issue, you know, our county auditor, it probably would be good policy statewide.
Mr. Chairman, I would say it would be good policy statewide as long as the county auditors were all able to do it. Yeah.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would think we could go one of two ways, but maybe there's a reason we can't go the other way, that the department would have the information to the districts sooner and the property tax information to them sooner. And is there anything in statute that says they have to have it to them by the 30th, or could we say they have to have it to them by the 22nd, and then they could still meet the October 1st deadline? And I don't know why we wouldn't be able to do that, but maybe you have a good explanation.
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, we currently have a statutory requirement for the department to provide the preliminary levy information to the school districts by September 8th. So the school districts essentially have 3 or 4 weeks to do reviewing the data. But what happens between September 8th and September 30th is that the school districts look at their levy reports, which are very complicated. They're about 30 pages long in small print. And it's right at the time school is starting, and so quite often school districts will have more up-to-date student data. Quite a number of school districts are revising their pupil data. They may be They may be updating their information about what sorts of health and safety projects they want to do. And so we've got this kind of narrow three-week period where we're making all sorts of changes at a time of year that's very difficult for the school districts because they're trying to open school at the same time. And so this would just allow a little bit more flexibility. We struggle each year to get the levy reports out to the school districts by early September, and we've been successful in doing that each year, but there just are a number of changes that school districts have to make once they get the information.
Thank you.
Senator Lynch, Mr. Nauman just shared a thought that maybe we could do both things. We could hold it in this committee as a for inclusion in the education omnibus education bill, which will go to taxes too, but then also pass the bill. In a sense, what we do would be to actually pass the bill out to the finance committee, and you'd go to the bill would go to finance and then taxes, but then we'd also include the language in our education bill. So it'd actually be kind of a dual track. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, would you be thinking of doing it generic in the education
yes.
bill? Yes. Applying to all.
Right. And then that would give the tax committee a little bit extra time to think about it. Usually when the education bill goes to the tax committee, it's kind of a several-hour stand. And usually you only deal with tax issues, right. but there's a lot of – it doesn't give them a whole lot of time to think about it.
So. Senator Stump, I think that's an excellent plan of action.
Okay. Senator Scheid.
I move that Senate File 568 be laid over for possible inclusion in our bill. And
I think Senator Scheid.
To move it.
No, I think the motion would be to move Senate File 568 as amended. To pass Senate File 568 as amended and refer it to the full Finance Committee. And then we would include the language in our.
That would be part of the motion too. Okay.
No. That would
I
be
understand.
Part of the motion.
Yeah. We just didn't. That's our intent. That's fine, Mr. Okay. Chairman. Yeah.
Okay, Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 568 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full finance or committee on finance. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Rich, and thank you, Superintendent Williams.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think that does it for today.
Yeah, I think that's the
tomorrow we will continue with the governor's bill and then also the early. Okay, the early ed articles of the government.
At
8:30. At 8:30. Okay. Committee is adjourned. Thank you, members.